Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
It's the greatest single enemy to freedom that Americans have ever faced, and so far it has defeated us absolutely. I refer to the state-run school system. Good morning, my friends. This is Ben Graydon sitting in for Dr. John Coben this morning with Parents United and Responsibility for Education, here to talk to you some more about our education system today. Sometimes we euphemistically refer to it as a public school system, but it's nothing of the sort. Friends, none of our schools are operated solely by the parents whose children they matriculate, nor are they funded by those parents. No, these are government schools, and that's the term we should learn to use here. But where did our government school system come from? What are its roots and its origins? For its modern version, we must look to the German state of Prussia. Prussia had an army of professional soldiers who were defeated by the fiery little general Napoleon at the Battle of Hena in 1806. If the German folk were to be respected and feared in Europe, it was time for them to get serious. As John Taylor Gatto, the former New York State Teacher of the Year, points out in the Underground History of American Education, children would have to be disciplined through a new form of universal conditioning. They could no longer be trusted to their parents. Through forced schooling, everyone would learn that work makes free, and working for the state, even laying down one's life to its commands, was the greatest freedom of all. The Prussians, Gatto concludes, had a clear idea what centralized schooling should deliver. 1. Obedient soldiers to the army. 2. Obedient workers for mines, factories, and farms. 3. Well-subordinated civil servants trained in their function. 4. Well-subordinated clerks for industry. 5. Citizens who thought alike on major issues. And 6. National uniformity in thought, word, and deed. Well, today, most Americans view with disgust what the Nazis, the ultimate product of the Prussian school system, represented 60 years ago, while they fail to see that America is all but there herself now. That, too, Gatto tells us, is no coincidence, as 33 years after Prussia made state schooling work, we borrow the structure, style, and intention of those Germans for our own compulsion schools. Why did leaders within the young America adopt this militaristic Prussian school system? Was it to train professional soldiers? Well, not exactly. Our historical destination of personal independence gave way slowly to Prussian-style purpose schooling, not because the American way lost any competition of ideas, but because for the new commercial and manufacturing hierarchs, such a course made better economic sense, Gatto writes. It was a different kind of army needed by this young republic, supporters thought, in order to build it, just as the Prussians had built their military. The same school system was used to determine precisely how many thinkers, problem solvers, and working stiffs the state should require over the coming decade, then to determine the precise categories of training required to develop the percentages of human resource needed. Don't you love that term, human resource? Well, the most important lesson that a young soldier must learn is obedience, unquestioning obedience. This obedience was to be drilled into young students by school teachers licensed by the government. Something that Gatto notes once could have been reasoned an act of treason in America. Prussian citizens were deprived of all rights and privileges. Every existence was comprehensively subordinated to the purposes of the state, and in exchange, the state agreed to act as a good father, giving food, work, and wages suited to the people's capacity, welfare for the poor and elderly, and universal schooling for the children. In these people's schools, children learned obedience, cooperation, and correct attitudes, along with rudiments of literacy and official state myths of history. Get that, rudiments of literacy and official state myths of history. And we wonder why our literacy rate is about 50% today. But this universal schooling was then, is now, a fraud. And Gatto continues, from its inception, the folk school, The People's Place, heavily discounted reading. Reading produced dissatisfaction, it was thought. The Bell School remedy was called for, a standard of virtual illiteracy formerly taught under state church auspices. Reading offered too many windows onto better lives, too much familiarity with better ways of thinking. It was a gift unwise to share with those permanently consigned to low station, he writes. Well, in the public school nightmare, Gatto also writes, in Prussia, the purpose of the folk school, which educated 92% of the children, was not intellectual development at all, but socialization in obedience and subordination. Thinking was left to the real schooling, in which 8% of the kids participated. But for the great mass, intellectual development was regarded with managerial horror as something that caused armies to lose battles. Pause here again to recall the words of Woodrow Wilson less than 100 years after the Prussian system came to America. I quoted these for you yesterday. We want one class to have a liberal education. We want another class, a very much larger class of necessity, to forgo the privilege of a liberal education and fit themselves to perform specific, difficult, manual tasks. So with what were those of low station to be educated? With a non-literary, experience-based pedagogy, strong in music and industrial arts, a way to keep the poor happy without arousing in them hopes of drastically changing the social order. This was the work of, Gatto introduces us to, Heinrich Pestalozzi, who claimed ability to mold the poor to accept all the efforts peculiar to their class. By employing psychological means in the training of the young, class warfare might be avoided. Well, don't overlook the fact that the most essential element of state-run schooling was compulsory attendance. As Gatto points out, Prussia was prepared to use bayonets on its own people as readily as it wielded them against others. Keep that idea in mind as well, the idea of using bayonets on your own people. With the result, Gatto describes a state where scientific farming alternated with military drilling and with state-ordered meaningless tasks intended for no purpose but to subject the entire community to the experience of collective discipline, like fire drills in a modern junior high school or silent passing in the space between class periods. Prussia had become a comprehensive administrative utopia. It was Sparta reborn. In Sparta, you'll recall, children were taken from their parents during infancy and molded into soldiers for the militaristic Spartan society. Thus, Plato's utopian blueprint specified that no parent is to know his child, nor any child his parent, and the society was to be based upon a community of property and a community of families, from whose children by William Norman Grigg in The New American, July 21, 1997. Folks, there's an awful lot about this government school system that we need to know and understand, and the idea here is not just to oppose government in schools, but to inspire us as parents to take back that job which is given to us, which most of us have given away to someone else by default. It's the most important job that we can have, and I'd hope to encourage you as the day goes on here, as our hour remaining in front of us winds down, that you do have within you the ability to raise your own children. In fact, if you are a parent, you are a homeschooler. You are already given the gifts that you need to impart the knowledge, the values, and beliefs that your children need to have to them. Folks, education is the transfer of values from one generation to the next. That's all education is. It is not the impartation of academic knowledge, though that may be part of it. And it's interesting that the state makes it very difficult for some to homeschool by giving them the idea that they're not academically qualified, and yet we look at how they define education, and academics are nowhere in there. It's all about socialization, and socialization is all bad. And we'll talk some more about that as well as the morning winds on. Again, this is Ben Graydon sitting in this morning for Dr. John Coben. We'll be back just after this short break.
And critical analysis.
The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. Edmund Burke.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NP Pros. That's N as in non, P as in profit, P-R-O-S as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals. That's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
In Common Sense, Thomas Paine writes, "Could we take off the dark covering of antiquity pertaining to the origin of kings and of the state and trace them to their first rise, we should find the first of them nothing better than the principal ruffian of some restless gang, whose savage manners or preeminence subtly obtained him the title of chief among plunderers, and who by increasing in power and extending his depredations overawed the quiet and defenseless to purchase their safety by frequent contributions."
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And welcome back this morning. Ben Graydon here from Pure Ministries. Pure stands for Parents United in Responsibility for Education. Sitting in for the vacationing Dr. John Coben. He'll be back in this chair tomorrow morning at the regular time. If you'd like to get in contact with us, you can reach me at 1-800-871-8651. Again, 1-800-871-8651. Our website is pureeducation.com, pureeducation.com, share the E, make it one word. The website's relatively new. We had to do some reconstruction on it, so don't despair if you go there and find some empty pages, but that'll give you a look at what we're doing. And give me a call at that 800 number. Listen, we do meetings, and we love to get together with you folks and let you know some more things about how you can conduct homeschooling yourself. Also give you some information about everything else that's related here, and whether we're talking about money and taxes or debt or structuring or privacy, all of those things, including the medical and alternative medicine things, all go back to how we're educated and how we're dumbed down to do things according to the state line. We will be having a meeting in Traveler's Rest, just north of Greenville, weekend after next. That's on March the 26th, day before Easter, from 9:30 in the morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. That's at the Sargent branch of the library in Traveler's Rest, the Greenville County Library in Traveler's Rest. Again, give us a call at 1-800-871-8651 for some more information about that. We'll have some awesome information there for you about structuring and privacy and how to make your money work for you, how to be a good steward of what God has given you. And again, I hope you're a subscriber to the Times Examiner. I've been privileged to write a column there since the paper began about 11 and a half years ago. The Times Examiner, written here from Greenville, is the conservative voice of the upstate. The number there is 864-268-0576. Subscription price is about $20 a year, I believe. Best $20 you'll ever spend. You can blow that at a restaurant for a meal that you'll forget about the next day. But the Times Examiner sticks with you, and it's a great little paper. Love to have you be a part of that. Talking again this morning about the government school system and the administrative utopia that Prussia had designed to be set up here, using the schooling system that they put into place about 200 years ago. So the things that we see in education around us are not new. A lot of people trace back their quote-unquote problems in our government school system to about the early 1960s when prayer and Bible reading were removed from the schools, and yet that's not when the problems began at all. The problems were much, much before that. They're about actually 120 years before that, when in Massachusetts we started putting all education under the control of the state. Then, of course, we had that little event that took place in 1861 through 1865 that completely changed our country. In fact, we've not had a constitutional republic since then. Maybe we'll have a chance to talk a little bit about the War of Northern Aggression. Is about the nicest way we can put it. And by the way, I'm a transplanted Yankee, so I didn't come into this the way I grew up. I had to come down south and learn some things. I'm privileged to be in the South for about the last quarter century. Administrative utopia, Gatto describes it, and Americans must certainly recognize that we live in one today. Administrative utopias are a peculiar kind of dreaming by those in power, driven by an urge to arrange the lives of others, organizing them for production, combat, or detention. The operating principles of administrative utopia are hierarchy, discipline, regimentation, strict order, rational planning, a geometrical environment, a production line, a cell block, and a form of welfareism. Government schools and some private schools pass such parameters with flying colors. In one sense, administrative utopias are laboratories for exploring the technology of subjection and, as such, being to a precise subdivision of pornographic art, total surveillance and total control of the helpless. The aim and mode of administrative utopia is to bestow order and assistance on an unwilling population, to provide its clothing and food, to schedule it. Again, this is from John Taylor Gatto, the former New York State Teacher of the Year, has written some great stuff on dumbing us down, on dumbing down us through the government school system. So what exactly is the Prussian system? Would we know it if we saw it? Well, fortunately, Gatto describes it for us in detail. Prussia concocted a method based on complex fragmentations to ensure that its school products would fit the grand social design. Some of this method involved dividing whole ideas into school subjects, each further divisible. Some of it involved short periods punctuated by a horn so that self-motivation and study would be muted by ceaseless interruptions. There are many more techniques of training, but all were built around the premise that isolation from first-hand information and fragmentation of the abstract information presented by teachers would result in obedient and subordinate graduates properly respectful of arbitrary orders. Lesser men would be unable to interfere with policymakers because, while they could still complain, they could not manage sustained or comprehensive thought. Well-schooled children cannot think critically, cannot argue effectively. End of quote. By the way, folks, if you think there's an improvement to be made by going to a private Christian school, find one somewhere that doesn't use this Prussian model, and you may have a case, but all of our schools use the same model, folks. They use the same model that's designed to separate children from parents and to compartmentalize subjects up into divisions and fractions that make no sense. So it's the idea of first dividing all academia into separate disciplines or subjects so that mathematics is separate from history and literature is separate from the sciences. As a result, we have a populace that can examine something in its minutest detail but cannot see the big picture. This is what allows a nation to go to war against another nation for provocations supposedly caused by a third, yet unproven, while her citizens are completely unable to follow the money trail back to those who alone profit from such a war, because those that led that nation into war are of a particular political or religious persuasion. Though, as Gatto points out, one of the most interesting byproducts of the Prussian schooling turned out to be the two most devastating wars in modern history. Erich Maria Remarque, in his classic All Quiet on the Western Front, tells that the First World War was caused by the tricks of schoolmasters, and the famous Protestant theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer said that the Second World War was the inevitable product of good schooling. So what else does this Prussian schooling model look like or do? Well, Gatto continues, schooling after the Prussian fashion removes the ability of the mind to think for itself. It teaches people to wait for a teacher to tell them what to do and if what they've done is good or bad. Prussian teaching paralyzes the moral will as well as the intellect. It's true that sometimes well-schooled students sound smart because they memorize many opinions of great thinkers, but they actually are badly damaged because their own ability to think is left rudimentary and undeveloped. So this model is not to be followed in government schools alone, as many, if not most, private schools do the same thing. How many teach children to recite catechisms unwittingly and unthinkingly? Furthermore, the Prussian system does not focus on developing the individual to his highest personal potential. Rather, it segregates him by age into a group and stifles the individual to keep him as part of that group, a group that's also stifled into mediocrity. And we'll come back from this break and talk about what was the effect of the Prussian system in America. Gatto will tell us some more about that when we return.
Disinfecting the Modern Mainstream Media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
We have the rights as individuals to give as much of our own money as we please to charity, but as members of Congress, we have no right so to appropriate a dollar of public money. Congressman Davy Crockett.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
The law of non-contradiction. The same thing cannot at the same time both belong and not belong to the same object and in the same respect. Aristotle.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And welcome back. We're talking about the Prussian schooling system as it was applied in America and listening to the words of John Taylor Gatto, former New York State Teacher of the Year, who tells us that in 1889, the U.S. Commissioner of Education, William Torrey Harris, assured a railroad magnate, Collis Huntington, that American schools were scientifically designed to prevent over-education from happening. Get that. Scientifically designed to prevent over-education from happening. The average American would be content with his humble role in life, said the commissioner, because he would not be tempted to think about any other role. 1896, the famous John Dewey, then at the University of Chicago, said that independent, self-reliant people were a counterproductive anachronism in the collective society of the future. In modern society, said Dewey, people would be defined by their associations, not by their own individual accomplishments. In such a world, people who read too well or too early are dangerous because they become privately empowered, they knew too much, and they know how to find out what they don't know by themselves without consulting experts. Dewey said that the great mistake of traditional pedagogy was to make reading and writing constitute the bulk of early schoolwork. He advocated that the phonics method of teaching reading be abandoned and be replaced by the whole word method, not because the latter was more efficient, he admitted that it was less efficient, but because independent thinkers were produced by hard books, thinkers who cannot be socialized very easily. And folks, if you haven't learned to read by the phonics method, you haven't learned to read. And Dewey saw socialization as critical. By socialization, Dewey meant a program of social objectives administered by the best social thinkers in government. This is a giant step on the road to state socialism, the form pioneered in Prussia, and it's a vision radically disconnected with the American past, its historic hopes and dreams. So when you're homeschooling and you think you're looking for a way to have your children socialized, realize what you're doing here is you're following John Dewey, who was talking about a program of social objectives administered by the best social thinkers in government. You're not talking about something that your child needs in order to grow up a complete adult, as we've been given to believe. The underlying premise of Prussian schooling, Gatto writes, is that the government is the true parent of children. The state is sovereign over the family. And at the most extreme pole of this notion is the idea that biological parents are really the enemies of their own children and not to be trusted. Further, this system of schooling destroys communities by relegating the training of children to the hands of certified experts, and by doing so, it ensures that our children cannot grow up fully human. No, it is the ancient pharaonic dream of Egypt, compulsory subordination for all. Schools teach exactly what they are intended to teach, and they do it well. How to be a good Egyptian and remain in your place in the pyramid. When viewed as it was intended and as it has been perfected, the Prussian school model is completely inconsistent with American freedoms and with religious teachings about the value of the individual in the eyes of God. Yet it's still the system of education used by default in every government school classroom in America, and oddly, even in most, if not all, private schools. Education appears in many ways to be failing, but it's not failing. It's succeeding exactly as designed by statists, first in Prussia, but certainly in America as well. As we know, folks, we're facing the same sorts of things here in South Carolina right now. We have a bill that's been put forward. Actually, three different versions are being debated in the House and the Senate right now, called Put Parents in Charge. Well, I have a problem when we have a bill arising from the state that purports to put parents in charge, when yet it doesn't do the most important thing that has to be done to put parents in charge, and that is to remove state compulsory attendance laws. We'll talk a little bit more about that the next hour. But understand, we don't have compulsory education laws. If we did, the state would fail its own law, because we know the education really reeks when it comes to academic standards, and homeschoolers are beating them hands down. We have compulsory attendance laws. Think about the two places in the world where we have compulsory attendance laws. One is school, the other is jail. And we have a call this morning. Go ahead, caller. You on the air?
Hello?
Hello. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, I can just barely hear. I'm calling to talk to Greg.
Go ahead, I can hear you.
Okay. I'm kind of concerned about some of the things you're saying. This personal responsibility stuff goes a long way.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. You're about to put some people out of work, you know?
Well, good morning to you, and how are you this morning?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. Well, personal responsibility is what it's all about, don't you agree?
Well, I'm kind of concerned. You know, what about the credentials that a person would need in order to be a home school teacher?
Are you a father?
Yes, I am.
That's all the credential you need.
Well, don't you have to be a licensed teacher of some sort?
No, you don't have to be a licensed teacher.
Well, what about all of those teachers that would be put out of jobs if I taught my family?
Well, that's what it's all about, is teaching your children to carry on in a trade that you'd like them to have.
Hmm. Well, how can this thing work? I mean, when people start providing for their own family, teaching their own children, you know, personal responsibility could put health providers out of business, for instance.
Absolutely. Amen. You got it, brother. Tell you what, if you can hang on through the top of the hour, we'll talk some more at the other side of the break.
Well, I'm interested. Okay, I'll do that.
Fantastic. Folks, we'll be back after the short break.
You're listening to TRN.
Public schools will never excel because they lack intellectual capital and have to compensate for too many social problems. Daniel Golden.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but he has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as he did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. Frederick Bastiat.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And good morning, folks. Welcome back. Top of the hour here. This is Ben Graydon sitting in for Dr. John Coben. Ben Graydon with Parents United and Responsibility for Education. We were talking with a caller just for the break. I think we've lost the caller over the break, but he was asking some questions about personal responsibility and about whether or not you need to be licensed and so forth to teach your children. Obviously, you don't need to be licensed to have a child. You don't need to be licensed to teach your child. And as far as personal responsibility, that's what this is all about. It's about teaching our children personal responsibility as they see it in us by example, as they see us taking complete responsibility for our responsibilities before God to raise our children. Then obviously they're going to grow up more responsible themselves than they will if they see us just turning our children over to someone else for raising. Talking about compulsory attendance laws, if the state really wants to reform and put parents back in charge, then what they need to focus on is compulsory attendance laws and whether or not those should still be with us. Well, in the off chance that something would possibly happen in the world of politics that could put parents back in charge of the education of their own children, in the past, I've made some efforts to reach out to would-be office holders to encourage them to stand up for parental and family rights. Now, following is a letter that I wrote to a South Carolina gubernatorial candidate about 3 years ago, and I think, do we have the caller back? All right, the caller's back. Let me get back over here near the telephone, and we'll talk some more with him. Morning, caller. Go ahead. You're back on the air.
Well, good morning. Thank you. I missed the radio in the interim, so I'll just voice my questions.
Go ahead.
Yes. I'm concerned that, I was brought up to believe that I had to have an education in order to provide these services for myself or to acquire them. And you're saying that I could just go ahead and do it? Explain this to me.
Absolutely. Well, sir, you do need an education, but what is that education and what's involved with that? And if we're talking about academics to the extent that they're important, your children are going to get more of an academic focus at home where we're more concerned about academics than they are out there in the government school arena where they're more concerned about socialization. So as far as the academic standards are concerned, we're going to get a much better education at home than we are inside of an institution, be it government or private. And as far as their own personal responsibility is concerned, how are we more responsible towards our children? By giving them what's best in our eyes or by letting them get what the government would have them have by default?
Uh-huh. So what I see that my family might need and what the government says they need might not be the same?
That's probably a pretty good assumption.
My. Thinking about all the time invested in acquiring what they want them to have. Okay, now, thinking about this thing as it extends, I mean, how far does this reach? Self-employment, self-help? What about church?
Are you asking what are the limits of personal responsibility?
Yeah, this idea is difficult.
Yes, it is, and you'll find that once you head down this path, and I think I know who this is, so I hear tongue-in-cheek over here, but once you head down this path, you're going to find that personal responsibility is something that has no limits. In fact, God puts us all here on earth. We're all going to stand or fall before Him when the judgment day comes, and so that's an individual thing. No one's going to stand or fall in our place. Yes, it does reach out into church, and you'll find that when you become a committed homeschooler, when you become committed to putting your family first, you're going to start questioning a lot of things that we do by tradition, that we do by rote, that have really no basis in the Bible. And if that's what we're looking to as a reason to go to church, and I would hope that would be up there somewhere, then we're going to have to stop and reevaluate a number of things. What was it you had in mind?
Well, for one thing, I'm concerned with the conflict that this would, to start this kind of thing, am I ready to handle the conflict that might come down my way?
Well, it does create some conflict. So when you find that you have to do things differently at home, so that your children are not segregated by age, and then you walk in the door of your church on Sunday morning, you find that they are segregated by age, then you have to make some decisions. Do I continue to do it this way? Do I do something different? Do I rock the boat here? And you'll find that the Lord will lead you in all sorts of ways when you start doing something so radical as going back to Scripture as your standard for all that you believe and all that you do.
Hmm. Okay. You know, I'm going to hang up, and unless you have some questions of me, I'm going to hang up and listen to you develop this thing, because this is really strange stuff, man.
Good to have you with us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for that caller. All right. Thank you very much. Personal responsibility. Absolutely. That's what we're all about. Well, if we have personal responsibility, if we're responsible for all that we do, why should we be compelled to send our children someplace where they're going to get something that we come to realize as parents is not in their best interests? And, of course, we heard Rob Rice yesterday. He has his own opinion about who should determine what's in the best interest of the child and what actually is. Anyway, here's a letter that I wrote back a few years ago, two or three years ago, to a gubernatorial candidate. I think I sent it out to several of them and actually put it in my column in the Times Examiner. It was a distinct privilege and pleasure to meet with you last week over lunch and to discuss our common vision for improving education in South Carolina. Electability considerations aside, I hope that you'll seriously consider the much-needed repeal of South Carolina's compulsory attendance laws. If nothing else, it's a sovereignty issue. Who has the right to decide where my children should be and with whom they should associate, me or the state? There's only one right answer to that question, regardless of whose children are involved, and certainly no thinking person would begin to argue that any child should be forced to consume this state's miserable bottom-of-the-barrel excuse for public education. Those laws serve only to make the default decision for education choice, the tax-funded free state schools, the worst possible choice. As to parents who might choose just to let their children wander the streets if they were not legally compelled to send them to school, frankly, those parents are now so irresponsibly detached from their children's upbringing as to render that choice of no further consequence. We're going to break away from this letter just a minute. We have another caller come in. Get over here again, close to the telephone. Go ahead, caller.
Thank you. I've been kind of monitoring your show as I can. And this morning you're talking about something kind of dear to my heart, because I did the homeschooling for both of my sons. They're now graduated. And I can tell you that it really does not take a degree or anything like that to teach your kids. I mean, what degree did you have when you taught them the most difficult thing, and that is to talk? When they came into the world, their natural instinct is to learn. All you got to do is present them something. Now, I'm not just saying this as a boast. What I'm saying here is as encouragement for somebody else. My homeschooler took first place in the math competition in the entire state of Pennsylvania. Now all of the other schools for the entire state of Pennsylvania. Why? Is he anything exceptional? No, because he was subjected to his natural home environment of learning.
Absolutely.
Whenever you put somebody in an artificial environment of learning, such as public schools or government schools, then they naturally, it's alien to them. And there's too much conflict of what the other kids are doing, so that they're not doing what nature had them to has of them, and that's to absorb the information from their natural teachers, the parents. There are a myriad of things out there to help people do public school or homeschooling. You don't really have to have a degree in anything. You don't have to be a super whiz in the subject, because there's books. There's things on the internet where the kids can do what they naturally do and sit and watch TV. All you do is you plug in a videotape and they've got the lectures on tape. And the parents get to learn at the same time.
Absolutely. So no special education required, no degrees, no licenses, and your sons turned out fine.
my second son skipped 11th and 12th grade and went straight into college because he was accelerated. My oldest son is the one who took the math competition. Fine, I would say that they're superior. They don't have the what I consider maladjustments to that I see in a lot of young people or teenagers and young 20s. They don't have that because they've had family support the entire time. Now, I would like to make one suggestion to you.
Go ahead.
You might add to your... Go ahead.
Go ahead.
All right. What I'm going to suggest is that that churches do more to support homeschooling. When I was doing it, now this agreed was 15 years ago when we got started, I didn't like the quality of the education in the government schools and the type of things that they were working with. And I thought that the teachers themselves, because I went in and met them, and I thought that they were hopelessly inadequate to take my position as teacher. So that's the reason why my wife and I decided to do the homeschooling in the first place. But we found that there was very little support. There is no reason why the churches can't open their buildings to the church members so that homeschoolers can bring their kids together for some period of time during the day where they could socialize with one another and have outside recreational things where the homeschoolers in a particular church could go to the zoo, could go to the museums, and do it as a group. When they find that there's more people doing it and that there are groups like this doing it, especially the bigger churches, which has more members.
Have you found the church to be teaching what the Bible teaches about education and who's responsible for it?
I'm really qualified to speak too much on what the Bible teaches. I did so out of personal interest for my family. I had to put my children first and my family first before what I considered anything else to be relevant. And what the government wants is just way down on the list. I didn't do it because it was a biblical concept or command or whatever. I did it because I love my kids.
Awesome.
And anybody who loves their children would put the children before they put the, idea of schooling.
Absolutely.
In my opinion.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for that call, sir. We're going to break away and take a break, and when we come back, we'll have some more about homeschooling. Thank you.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. Edmund Burke.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN, and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS, as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's npros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
In Common Sense, Thomas Paine writes, Could we take off the dark covering of antiquity pertaining to the origin of kings and of the state and trace them to their first rise, we should find the first of them nothing better than the principal ruffian of some restless gang, whose savage manners or preeminence subtly obtained him the title of chief among plunderers, and who by increasing in power and extending his depredations overawed the quiet and defenseless to purchase their safety by frequent contributions.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And welcome back. We took a little bit longer in that last segment to accommodate that caller. Two excellent calls back to back there. We just heard from a father in Pennsylvania, I believe he said, who's taken the responsibility to raise his own sons. Didn't do so necessarily from a biblical standpoint, and you know, that's fine. The Bible teaches us what we need to do about schooling, but you know, whether you make the argument from a biblical standpoint or from a business standpoint or from a government standpoint as a libertarian or a strong conservative, however you make the argument, from a business standpoint even, you can't argue against the preference, against the superiority of teaching your own children and taking full responsibility for that yourself. Folks, everything else we do because we recognize that we have personal responsibility. We don't let the government buy us groceries. We buy our own groceries. We choose from different grocery stores. Same thing when it comes to our meals. We don't eat all of our meals at McDonald's or Burger King or wherever. We sometimes even learn there is such a thing as a stove and a refrigerator and pots and pans at home, and we can cook our own meals. And most of us learn to be self-sufficient in all those areas. And yet when it comes to the most important part of our lives, to our parenting, to our roles as fathers and mothers and raising our children, we by default too often give our children over to someone else. Sometimes, more often than not, that's the government, but oftentimes it's even a church somewhere in a private Christian school. And I'm not downing private Christian schools. That's my background. That's where I've been as well. But I'm here to tell you, folks, if you want to do what the Bible tells you to do about your children, first of all, read what the Bible says. We went through some of those verses yesterday. Every verse in Scripture that's concerning children and their raising and their education gives that responsibility back to their parents. Now, what can you do? Can you delegate that to someone else? Again, that's a decision that you have to make. But man, just like the Scripture that tells us to love our own wives, we obviously understand there are limits, the propriety put on us about how far we can delegate that. You don't want to delegate the love of your wife. You may get some assistance, but you're not going to delegate it to someone else. And certainly the same is true of our children. So we have to understand that our children are our responsibility. Now, we deal with some issues concerning the state. We do have compulsory attendance laws in every state that we have to deal with. And what do we do about those? What are the chances of having those laws overturned? Well, I'm hoping as more and more people get educated about how those laws came to be, what the reasons are behind them, as they get more and more involved in taking personal responsibility in all areas of their lives, that they'll exert the pressure that they need to exert upon elected officials, be it governors, be it state representatives, whoever, as this letter I'm reading to you, as I'm pointing out here to some gentlemen who were running for governor here in South Carolina a few years ago, I'm hoping that people will take it upon themselves to contact their elected officials. We'll be back just after this short break.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Public schools will never excel because they lack intellectual capital and have to compensate for too many social problems. Daniel Golden.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. Frederick Bastiat.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
And back to more of that deep thinking and critical analysis. State-run, tax-funded schools cannot be fixed. They're doing exactly what they were established to do, to supplant the sovereignty of the family with that of the state, and there's ample documentation of that. Only truly public schools, operated and funded completely by the sovereign families residing in a sovereign local community, one of the options sure to be considered when school and state separate, can restore public education as a viable concept. Now, I understand that those ideas are foreign to many, if not most. The image of the local public school has an aura of Americanism about it akin to apple pie and baseball. That nostalgic institution, however, has ceased entirely to exist, and what has replaced it is the single greatest threat to our continued existence as a free and sovereign nation that we've ever faced. Has my use of the word sovereign jumped out at you? It, too, is a forgotten concept, but sovereignty concerns drove our founding as a nation. Sovereign means having supreme authority within a limited sphere. Should sovereignty not apply to a family in matters concerning the home? Certainly it should. And if several sovereign homes in a local community wish to pool their resources to start a school, should they not be free to do so? That, quite frankly, is how public education started in America, as an exercise of sovereignty. But how can sovereignty exist when the state and even the federal government intrude? Today's, quote, public schools, unquote, teach that America was born in rebellion against the throne of England, but that's not true. Rare is the history class that even mentions it, but on December 22, 1775, King George signed the American Prohibitory Act, prohibiting free trade, a foreign trade with the American colonies, declaring them out of the protection of the crown, blockading their ports, and marking the colonists as foreign enemies. The king tried to extend his sovereignty beyond the scope of his limited sphere, and doing so, ejected the American colonies. In the same way, our state-run public schools have ejected us. Well, John Adams called the Prohibitory Act the Act of Indecency, and he wrote that by it, the King, Lords, and Commons have united in sundering this country from that, I think, forever. It is a complete dismemberment of the British Empire. It throws 13 colonies out of the royal protection and makes us independent in spite of supplications and entreaties. It may be fortunate that the Act of Independency should come from the British Parliament rather than from the American Congress, but it's very odd that Americans should hesitate at accepting such a gift from them. Likewise, the failure of state-run education is a gift to us, if we'll take it as such, and not try to refurbish the wreck. The American Revolution was just that, a full-circle return to legitimate government. Less than 100 years later, Americans fought another war amongst themselves over many of the same issues, and while I wasn't privileged to be born in the South, I would without a doubt support the sovereign principles for which she fought. Well, there comes a point in a man's life when he must decide whether he will do the thing that will get him elected or whether he will challenge the status quo and fight for true sovereignty, even if it means that he may lose the battle. I've chosen the latter course. Part of that fight and necessity includes political involvement in individual campaigns, but it also requires a reckoning of how best to accomplish the larger goal. Again, this is from a letter to a gubernatorial candidate. If you were campaigning on the idea of ending public education as we know it, in reestablishing family sovereignty in that arena, you couldn't keep me out of your campaign. I believe now that you're at least sympathetic to some of these ideas, and I appreciate that, but my focus must be on encouraging an absolute commitment to the restoration of family sovereignty. As the gubernatorial campaign unfolds, this is the one issue I'll be watching for. If you or any of the other gubernatorial contenders make that commitment, rest assured that you or he will find in me an ally. So again, folks, our greatest battle here is with compulsory education laws. Well, sometimes people say, we understand where you're coming from when it comes to the federal government, but you have to understand that all of our state constitutions talk about education, and so therefore, it's always been with us, and it's always been a role of the state. Well, in fact, that's not true. In fact, I've done a study going back and looking at all of the different state constitutions and seeing what they require and where it came from. We talked yesterday a little bit about the Massachusetts, the old Deluder Act, Massachusetts Bay Colony of 1647, that required a community that had 50 families to hire a teacher to teach their children to read. And we've looked at the first constitution of the state of Massachusetts written in 1780, and in fact builds upon that. Its preamble acknowledges the goodness of the great legislator of the universe. And the second article states it's the right as well as the duty of all men in society publicly and at stated seasons to worship the supreme being, the great creator and preserver of the universe. Then Article 3 calls for public worship of God because the happiness of a people and the good order and preservation of civil government essentially depend upon piety, religion, and morality. And because these require public instructions in piety, religion, and morality, the people of this commonwealth have a right to invest their legislature with power to authorize and require the several towns, parishes, precincts, and other bodies, politic, or religious societies to make suitable provision at their own expense, mind you, this was not supported by the state, for the institution of the public worship of God and for the support and maintenance of public Protestant teachers of piety, religion, and morality, in all cases where such provisions shall not be made voluntarily. Now, Massachusetts founders thus required the public worship of God, which included the support of religious teachers at each town's expense, which the legislature could require if it wasn't done voluntarily. And note again that this requirement is for the teaching of piety, religion, and morality, not math, English, social studies, and science. The Massachusetts Constitution also gave the legislature authority to require attendance, not in an institution somewhere, but as in pay attention, upon the instructions of the public teachers, which, remember, was to be in piety, religion, and morality. As to where control of that education was to reside, the Massachusetts Constitution stated that the several towns, parishes, precincts, and other bodies, politic, or religious societies shall at all times have the exclusive right of electing their public teachers and of contracting with them for their support and maintenance. Monies collected by each body were to be used to pay its own teachers of their own religious sect or denomination, and no subordination of any one sect or denomination to another was to be ever established by law. The state religion, by the way, of every state was Christian, but most did not advance one sect or denomination over another. The state, therefore, had no control of what was taught. So the view of the Massachusetts Constitution, the original Constitution towards education, was that for all intents and purposes, an extension of the old Deluder Act, that education was necessary to enable citizens to read the Bible and to worship God, that it could be required by the legislature but must be controlled locally and could not advance any one denomination over another. And by the way, this also brings a correct perspective to the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, which was being passed at about the same time. We find that the constitutions of New Hampshire, next door to Massachusetts, Virginia, passed in 1776, make no mention of schools, teachers, or state-mandated education of any form. Neither does the 1796 Constitution of Tennessee, although it does contain this one interesting provision: no person who denies the being of God or of a future state of rewards or punishments shall hold any office in the civil department of the state. And South Carolina's first constitution establishes religious requirements for public office holders that many seminarians today would be hard-pressed to meet. So when we come back from this break, we'll talk a little bit more about the history of education in the United States.
You're listening to TRN.
Public schools will never excel because they lack intellectual capital and have to compensate for too many social problems. Daniel Golden.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. Frederick Bastiat.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And welcome back this morning. We're talking about education here in these United States of America. And boy, folks, we're educated, but we don't have much common sense. U.S. Marines headed for Iraq were boarding a chartered commercial airliner when they were stopped by security. They weren't allowed to board while carrying their knives. No problem. They relinquished their knives and boarded the plane, carrying their M16 rifles and M60 machine guns. Boy, folks, that's a case of what old Jerry Clower used to call, you as educated beyond your intelligence. That's the state of education here in America. Talking a little bit about the history of education, this again is Ben Graydon with Parents United and Responsibility for Education, speaking with you this morning. Contact number for me is 1-800-871-8651. Sounds like we've got a caller coming in. We may take a call here before we get back to talking about the education.
Good morning.
Let me check in a second here. See, sounds like we have a caller. Go ahead, caller.
Good morning.
Good morning, Roy.
Well, it's great to hear some of this about education and the importance of the scriptures in the heritage of our educational unity. You know, I take some people have missed at Yale and Harvard. And some of these key elite schools originally were founded to make preachers out of boys.
That's absolutely correct. Absolutely. Our first colleges were preacher colleges. Go ahead.
Yeah, well that's great. I just wanted to comment on that and say good morning and keep at it. I'm really enjoying this.
Well, thank you for calling. We enjoyed hearing you earlier in the week. There's Roy Magnuson calling in, folks. If you didn't hear him, he was on the show the first 2 days of this week. Back again talking about our original constitutions here in the United States and what they said about education. The original constitutions of the original 13 states either make no mention of schools or they place state support for schools within the context of state support for the Christian religion. Those who would deny that America was founded as a Christian nation have apparently never bothered to read these founding documents. This even went so far as to include a tithe tax in some states, as in Maryland. The legislature may, in their discretion, lay a general and equal tax for the support of the Christian religion. All of the various state constitutions evolved through the years, not always by a simple amendment process like that of the U.S. Constitution, but often in very abrupt and radical ways. It's instructive, then, after looking first at each state's founding constitution or charter to see what its original beliefs and purposes were, to follow them as changes occurred to them in order to place them in their historical context, and to discern both the intent and the effect of those changes. State constitutions written soon after 1800 tend to include education, but still in a religious context. For example, the Mississippi Constitution of 1817 says this: "Religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government, the preservation of liberty, and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged in this state." And this was an ongoing recognition of the principle laid out in the Old Deluder Act. But around the turn of the century, 1800, change was in the wind, change in the prevailing religious paradigm, and thus in the focus of the underlying religious purpose for state-mandated education. The Congregational Church in New England, and then in 1803 Harvard College, had been taken over by the Unitarians, who had a very different view of God and man, and who saw through state-run common schooling the means of perfecting man and creating heaven on earth. Also at work at the same task, if for only slightly different reasons, was the socialist movement that was the precursor of communism. In 1840, Horace Mann was sent to Germany to bring the Prussian schooling methods back to Massachusetts, and this was reflected shortly thereafter not only in the constitutions of new states, but in the rewritten constitutions of existing states. That little event in our nation's history then occurred between 1861 and 1877 that changed forever our national paradigm about education, who should be responsible for it, and what should be taught. That little event, by the way, had nothing to do with ending slavery. Actually, a careful reading of the 14th Amendment shows that it was about making slaves of every citizen of the United States. But as proof of the effectiveness of the victor rewriting the history books, most Americans today certainly believe that slavery was the cause of the war between the states. To illustrate how that event changed American beliefs about education and by its application our perspective on history, let's track the changes in the Constitution of the state of Mississippi, or more correctly, its four constitutions. Mississippi's original Constitution of 1817, we've already mentioned, said this about education: "Religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government, the preservation of liberty and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged in this state." The same sentence occurs then in the state's 1832 Constitution. The post-war Constitution of 1868, however, remember that was adopted at gunpoint by the few vanquished Mississippians who the North allowed to vote, was taken from the Prussian playbook that had not yet been widely accepted outside of the increasingly socialistic Northeast. Those changes are reflected accordingly. As the stability of a republican form of government depends mainly upon the intelligence and virtue of the people, it shall be the duty of the legislature to encourage by all suitable means the promotion of intellectual, scientific, moral, and agricultural improvement by establishing a uniform system of free public schools, by taxation or otherwise, for all children between the ages of 5 and 21 years, and shall as soon as practicable establish schools of higher grade. When we come back from this break, we'll finish up with this concept about the changing constitutions.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. Edmund Burke.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
In Common Sense, Thomas Paine writes, could we take off the dark covering of antiquity pertaining to the origin of kings and of the state and trace them to their first rise, we should find the first of them nothing better than the principal ruffian of some restless gang, whose savage manners or preeminence subtly obtained him the title of chief among plunderers, and who by increasing in power and extending his depredations overawed the quiet and defenseless to purchase their safety by frequent contributions.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
All right, folks, we're talking about the original state constitutions and how they dealt with education, how they changed down through the years, specifically looking at Mississippi's constitution that in 1817 talked about encouraging religion, morality, and knowledge, and then it's 1868, after the war between the states, at the point of federal guns, that constitution was changed. The purpose of education now was to create good citizens rather than godly citizens. And as the controllers of the education process, the state would define what constituted a good citizen. It's very necessary for the complete subjugation of the South. There was to be a state board of education and a superintendent of education who would report to the legislature, and a superintendent in each county who would report to the state board, and it was all to be funded by property and poll taxes. Now what had started out to be a state encouragement of religious instruction had become the means of state indoctrination in the state's religion, not at all the same thing, and it's had a monstrous effect on our nation. So yes, the state constitutions do mandate education, but in none of the original documents was it anything but religiously oriented, and then it was only a religion that worshipped the God of the fathers, God of our fathers. When state control of education grew, it did so as the result of a socialistic indoctrination, even if under the guise of religion, and political treachery to the point of outright war. When citing state constitutions as support for the continuation of state indoctrination of children via state control of the means of education, then, it's essential that this contextual foundation be considered. Thus considered, the statist argument for the necessity of public schools becomes a house of cards, and that's the truth. Well, folks, I hope you're thinking seriously about whose responsibility is education. This, again, is Ben Graydon with Parents United in Responsibility for Education. That name is no mistake. Parents are responsible for education, whether they believe so or not. Even if there is a state law that requires the attendance of our children in some institution that the state runs or controls through one means or another, the education of our children is still our responsibility. And if we really get that burning deep in our gut, we'll do everything that we can to get the state out of it. The state has no business in our bedrooms. The state has no business in our houses telling us how to run our families. And I'm not suggesting by that there shouldn't be such a thing as a law against abortion, by the way. I know that phrase is often used because abortion is just an issue of life. By the way, you know where that came from, don't you? The 14th Amendment redefined citizenship. It created a new class of citizens, and it made citizens that were subject to the federal government. It said all persons born or naturalized in the United States, by the way, were you born or naturalized in the United States? That's Washington, D.C., District of Columbia. American Samoa, Puerto Rico, Guam, and the American Virgin Islands. That's not the 50 states. But we're talking about a new class of citizen here because we had to give citizenship to the freed slaves that the 13th Amendment created, and we could spend a whole lot of time talking about what was really going on there. But all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof shall be a citizen now, first of the United States, and secondly of the state wherein he resides. Prior to that, we were citizens of the United States of America by virtue of the fact we were a citizen of one of the states. Now we have a new class of citizen, which, by the way, has no more constitutional rights and only has privileges. Remember Mark Furman in the O.J. Simpson trial? He didn't plead take his Fifth Amendment right. He took his Fifth Amendment privilege. And, folks, that's a big difference there. So we've had a lot of changes brought about because of the war, because of the 14th Amendment. We've got a new class of citizens now, and folks, we're still fighting with that in a big way. We have marriage licenses now, marriage licenses which, according to Black's Law Dictionary, were to regulate intermarriage, which we typically think of as interracial marriage, because back then that's what it was. We're talking about a freed black and a free white. But what it really was between a new U.S. citizen subject to the jurisdiction of the United States and between a free and sovereign American. Are we free and sovereign? I hear this a lot in patriot circles. Is there such a thing as a sovereign individual? No, quite frankly, there's not. But we are sovereign insofar as we're part of we the people. The Declaration of Independence, great study here. Declaration of Independence did something that had never been done before, has never been done since. Declaration of Independence captured the sovereignty that had resided before in the person of the king and brought that forward to a group called we the people. We the people collectively were sovereign in the place of the king. So as part of we the people working collectively, we are sovereign. And we the people represent, we elect our representatives to go to Washington, to go to our state capitals, to represent our wishes there. But that government does not take the place of we the people. It is the slave, it is the servant of we the people. And if that government becomes a life unto itself, if it takes on its own sovereignty and starts imposing its own jurisdiction, its own false created corporate jurisdiction over us as individuals, then we have a problem. We've certainly seen that since 1861 when we had a president that was probably the most dangerous to the American Constitution of any president. That's our hero, Abraham Lincoln, who took that away from us. Anyway, it's had big things to do with education. We've had a lot of changes that have come about. We think our schools have gotten bad in the last 30 years, last 40 years. Actually, that's just been the icing on the cake because they're doing exactly what they were designed to do. Anyway, we spent a lot of time focusing on this sort of thing. I've probably got a lot more I could cover here than I've got in the few minutes that I have remaining this morning. But I would like to invite you to come out. If you're local here in the Greenville area, could get here. We're having a meeting on Saturday the 26th. That's a week from this Saturday. That's at the Traveler's Rest Library. Traveler's Rest, you know, is just north of Greenville. And if you'd like to call me at 1-800-871-8651, leave your name and number. I'll call you back and give you some directions. Again, that's 1-800-871-8651. Meeting on Saturday, March the 26th at the Traveler's Rest branch of the Greenville County Library. And we'll be talking more about freedom and sovereignty and how to make your money work for you, how to get free from government control, how to take back the responsibility of your own lives, certainly in dealing with the education of your children, but in all other areas, reducing your tax burden by maybe doing some wise things to be structured. We think of Nelson Rockefeller, who sat before the Senate Confirmation Committee back in about 1974 when, you remember, Gerald Ford asked him to be his vice president after he became president when Nixon resigned. They asked him, "Mr. Rockefeller, how much money did you make last year?" He said, "Oh, about $650 million. "Well, how much money did you pay in taxes?" "Oh, I don't pay taxes." "Well, what do you mean?" "Well, I don't own that money. It's not my money. I don't own the suit I'm wearing. I don't own the car that drove me here. I don't own the airplane that flew me here. It's owned by my foundation, and they don't pay taxes." So, folks, there are ways to be structured to minimize your tax burden and to protect your privacy, and we'll teach you how to do that. One of many things that we do, and teach you personal responsibility, how to make your money go to work for you. If you've read Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Cash Flow Quadrant, you understand the importance of living in that I quadrant as an investor where your money is working for you. I know Dr. John Coben is an investment planner, and he certainly could use some business here as well, so don't hesitate to give him a call. We'd support him and the TRN network here any way you can. But if we can get to the place where our money's working for us instead of us working for our money, we'll be much better off. Gives us the freedom that we need to educate our own children. When we come back from the break, we'll conclude this morning.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media. Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
We have the rights as individuals to give as much of our own money as we please to charity, but as members of Congress, we have no right so to appropriate a dollar of public money. Congressman Davy Crockett.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
The law of non-contradiction, the same thing cannot at the same time both belong and not belong to the same object and in the same respect. Aristotle.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And good morning, folks. Welcome back to our last segment here in the TRN program this morning. We're here talking about education. This has been Ben Graydon with you from Parents United and Responsibility for Education. Website is www.pureeducation.com. Make that pure education. Share the E. Make it one word. And be happy to talk with you if you'd give us a call at 1-800-871-8651. 800-871-8651. We do go out and do seminars on homeschooling and personal responsibility. For more information about some of the education that we provide, you can give us a call and listen to a recorded message at 618-355-1178. Again, that's 618-355-1178. Also need to look at the Times Examiner if you're local here in the Greenville area, or even if you're not. We do ship the Times Examiner all over the United States and maybe even out. I'm not sure. But the Times Examiner is the conservative voice of the upstate. It's been around for about 11 and a half years, and yours truly has been privileged to be a part of it since the very beginning. You can call my friends Bob and Laverl Dill over there at the paper at 864-268-0576. Be the best $20 you've ever spent to subscribe to that for a year. I wanted to kind of wrap up the day in a little bit of a fun way, a little tongue-in-cheek here this morning. I've been talking a lot about freedom issues and getting a little bit away from specifically education, but a lot of the current events that are going on in the world, I love to read to my kids, and especially I like to read my youngest anymore, but my five-year-old really liked the Dr. Seuss series and The Cat in the Hat, and I was reading that to him one day and got a little inspired and went down to my desk, and this is what we came up with. So my apologies to Dr. Seuss here and The Cat in the Hat, but just hang on and have a little fun here. The funds did not come, 'twas too peaceful to play at the UN where they sat all that dull, warless day. Dick sat there with Rocky. They sat there, those two, and they said, how we wish we could stir up a big crisis or two. Too calm to make war and too famous to hide, they knew what they did must be hidden inside. So all they could do was sit, 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 sit. And they did not like it, not one little bit. And then something went boom. How that boom made them zoom. They looked, then they saw him step into the room. He was wearing a turban, the Cat in the Hat, and he said to them, why do you sit there like that? I know it's dull and the war clouds are sunny, but now that I'm here, you can make lots of money. I know some good wars you could start, said the Cat. I know some old tricks, said the Cat in the Hat. A lot of good tricks, I'll show them to you. Your voters will not mind it at all if I do. Then Rocky and Dick said, hooray, yippee-yay, for the voters will do whatever we say. But the Patriot said, no, no, don't do that. Don't you dare listen to that Cat in the Hat. He should not be here. He should not be about. You must not listen to him when the voters are out. Now, now, have no fear. Have no fear, said the Cat. I'm for the flag, said the Cat in the Hat. Why, we can have lots of good fun, said the Cat, with a game that I call Lock Up a Pat. The Patriots yelled, no, stop the confusion. Down, Cat in the Hat. Up, Constitution. Have no fear, said the Cat, I'll not break the law. In fact, we'll rewrite it, though it turns patriots raw. Look at me now, said the Cat, with the Patriot Act and Act Two top of that. I can make war on terror wherever I find it, and what's really great is I get to define it. I can hold up the net and habeas corpus, I can monitor mail and no one report us. But the voters will scream, they won't like it, said Dick. 'Twill take the right guy to make the plan stick. And so, said the Cat in the Hat, so, I will show you another good trick that I know. And then he ran out, And then fast as a fox, the Cat in the Hat came back in with a box, a big, big tent box with a label to see, a label that read, Big Tent GOP. In the box, said the Cat, are two GOP things, and soon you will see that they come without strings. When I open the box, you will see something new, and I call these new things Bush 1 and Bush 2. So we opened the latch on the box labeled Big Tent, and Bush 1 and Bush 2 sprang out like a present. They ran out quite fast. They said, how do you do? And Rocky and Dick cheered for Bush 1 and Bush 2. But some patriots said, no, they've a dangerous mission. But still others said, we need them. They're Christians. So with Rocky and Dick and the Turban Cat 2, the big tent represented by Bush 1 and Bush 2, and the Patriot Act, the first and the second, they tore up the house, they did all they reckoned, they outlawed protesters, they limited travel, they ran everything right up to their judge's gavel. No, no, not in our house, said the Patriot Nation, as Bush 1 and Bush 2 ran wild with elation. Do something fast, said the Corps who still cared. Slavery's near, they loudly declared. We've got to think of something to do. We've got to get rid of Bush 1 and Bush 2. So they got on the net, they had their say, and they told the Cat, take those bushes away. Oh dear, said the Cat, you did not like our game. Oh dear, what a shame, what a shame, what a shame. Then he shut up the bushes in their box with a hook, and the Cat went away with a sad kind of look. That's good, said the Patriots. He's gone away, yes. But America's left in a big awful mess. And then, who was back in the house? Why, the Cat. Have no fear of this mess, said the Cat in the Hat. I always pick up all my playthings, and so I will show you another good trick that I know. Then we saw him pick up all the things that were down, the Patriot Acts and the War of Renown. He put them away, then he said, that is that, and then he was gone with the tip of his hat. But Rocky and Dick had been watching and knew, even minus the Cat, they knew just what to do. Wasn't that fun, they asked with a thrill. And they opened the door and let in Bill and Hill. And again, my apologies to Dr. Seuss. Folks, this has been Ben Graydon with you this morning from Parents United and Responsibility for Education. We do a newsletter, by the way, $25 a year. Comes about every week. If you're interested in getting that, it comes to you on your email address. You could shoot me over an email at penben@bigplanet.com. That's penben@bigplanet.com. If you didn't get that, just call the 800 number, 1-800-871-8651. I'd love to talk to you about education, about parental responsibility, about how it's our responsibility as Christians, following the biblical mandate to educate our own children at home. If that's not the first order business for you, we can make it from a business perspective, from a libertarian perspective. We can make that argument, Lord, folks, any way that you want to do it. But it's our responsibility to raise our own children, and we'd love to talk to you about that. Again, if you're in the Greenville area, we have a meeting coming up on March the 26th. Love to have you be a part of that. That's on Saturday from 9:30 to 1 o'clock. Again, give me a call at 1-800-871-8651 to get some more information about that. And for more information about everything else that we do, give us a call and listen to our recorded message at 618-355-1178. Hope that this has been meaningful to you the last couple of days as we've talked about parental responsibility for education. There's no greater task that you can undertake than the raising of your own children, raising them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, giving them your own values and beliefs and not someone else's, and that shouldn't be dictated to you by anybody, be it church or state. That is your responsibility. Raise your own children. There can be nothing more gratifying than to see your children come up in the truth and to know that you are the one alone who's given them that truth. Again, it's been a real privilege to sit in here for Dr. John Coben. He'll be back behind the mic tomorrow. Someday, hopefully, maybe we'll get back and visit with you again. Until then, have a great day. God bless, and we'll see you here tomorrow.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Let's consider Christian stewardship in terms of financial planning, saving, eliminating debt, lessening the burdens that can accompany a serious illness or accident. One of the most important reasons that we acquire life, disability, and long-term care insurance is because we want to love our neighbors as ourselves.
After all, what kind of testimony do we give if we actually plan to rely on the charity of others? If we love others, especially our church and family members, we should do careful financial planning. Some Christians have 401k plans and need to be rolled over into a better investment alternative. Still others need to protect their wives and children by purchasing some inexpensive life or health insurance. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service. As an independent financial planning firm with a wide range of products, we're here to help you become a better financial steward. Find out about our many services at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.